This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. Hello, I'm Rob Rosenthal, the host for How Sound, which comes to you from PRX and Transom. I'm sure you remember this. Back in November of 2017, the church shooting in Texas. It was a massacre, really.
We begin today with this horrific shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas.
Horrific indeed. A gunman opened fire during services at the First Baptist Church there, killing 26 people, including the pastor's 14-year-old daughter. Freeman Martin of the Texas Department of Public Safety gave this description of the shooter.
He was dressed in all black. That suspect crossed the street to the church, exited his vehicle, and began firing at the church. That suspect then moved to the right side of the church and continued to fire. That suspect entered the church and continued to fire.
And the man then fled the scene and was later found dead in his car.
NPR reported heavily on the shooting in the days after the incident. Debbie Elliott was one of a team of reporters and producers assigned to the story.
In a huge breaking story like this, lots of times it's all hands on deck.
Debbie has reported on traumatic events a lot. Hurricane Harvey, for one. But still, think about it. Sutherland Springs is a town of about 600 people. Tiny. And 26 residents there were gunned down in a church of all places. And here comes Debbie into that scenario, a stranger with a microphone.
In some ways, you feel like this pariah who was here at this darkest moment for this town, and you've got your microphone out trying to get the story.
So how do you not be a pariah? Debbie filed several news spots and two features over about 3 days. She was busy, and she had to find stories quickly. And that meant connecting with the place and the people fast, all the while not being a pariah. Here's what she did. Initially, she read what she could about the incident and about the town. Then she flew to San Antonio.
When I land, I turn on local radio and I listen to what local people are talking about, both public radio and, commercial talk radio, whatever I can find, and sort of get a sense for whatever I can find out while I'm driving. I also kind of stop along the way at a little market and got a sandwich and just kind of absorbed the world around me, right?
How is pulling off the road and going into a market and buying a sandwich helpful to you? How do you get a sense of place just from buying a sandwich?
Well, don't stop at the McDonald's that's like every other McDonald's in every road you've ever been on, right? Go somewhere that's local that just sort of gives you a feel for things and watch. And, you know, sometimes when you're in places like that, people will be talking about whatever the news is or whatever's happening, and you'll pick up on something or find out about something, whether it be there's an event that's planned or something. This did not happen in that case, but it's just always a good idea to get a feel for where you're heading before you just plow in.
Eventually, Debbie arrived in Sutherland Springs after about an hour drive from San Antonio.
I think the key when you come in, especially in a story like this, is I avoid the circus. So I did not immediately, when I drove into town, I didn't take the main road and go to where the, you know, I exaggerate, but it felt like there were two dozen satellite trucks set up on the main road, you know, totally disrupting whatever life was like in this town, and just hordes of journalists roaming around. So I wasn't the only person there with a microphone.
Before she flew to Texas, Debbie learned from her research about a community building in the town. She thought, well, that's where things happen. So she headed there.
And I noticed that people were coming to this community house and they were setting things up. And so that's sort of where I decided I would start to find out, well, what is this activity here that's away from the circus that's over there where people are having news conferences and all of the reporters who are in town are gathered? Let me go over here and see what these local people are doing.
Debbie actually drove away from the community center. She parked her car in a neighborhood a few blocks away, and then she walked to the center. Walking through a neighborhood is another way to get a sense of place.
I always have my tape recorder rolling. I get out of my car rolling, and I use a shotgun mic. I kind of hold it down by my hip. It's like part of my body at this point. But I don't approach people like, hey, tell me what happened, you know, and stick it in. You know, I come up and I say, hey, you know, I see something's going on here. My name's Debbie. You know, I'd love to find out what you all are, you know. I explain what I'm looking for and ask, you know, respectfully, would it be okay if I talked to you? Would it be okay if I kind of hung around and saw what's happening here? And usually people say yes. Sometimes they say no, and I say, okay, you know, thank you. Have a good, you know, go on, you know, and look for the next thing. But in this case, you know, these people were willing to talk about what they were trying to do to help and just what this church had meant to their community and what an impact this had been on that community.
Danny Morales and his sisters are helping organize the donations.
I'm like, I just can't believe that this happened in our own community.
Laura Morales says they learned of the tragedy when their mother called, saying she heard gunfire Sunday morning.
She heard it, and then it stopped, and then it started again. I guess he had reloaded or something, because then she heard the gunshots again, like start over. So it was chaos after that.
The Morales family is connected to First Baptist. Their late grandfather was a member there years ago.
He's deceased now. He would always go, he didn't have a vehicle, but he would get on his lawnmower and he would drive over there and he would sit through church and then he'd drive back on the little lawnmower.
That's how small Sutherland Springs, Texas is, that a parishioner could ride lawn equipment to worship services. The town just southeast of San Antonio.
So I try to be very respectful when I come into a situation like that, realizing that this has been difficult for people. And there were reporters who were just going door to door, knocking on people's doors. I did not do that, you know. I really don't want somebody knocking on my door and sticking a microphone in my face out of the blue. Do you? You know, it's maybe the golden rule is what I guess this is. I treat people the way that I would want to be treated. So I tried to go to places that were public places. You know, I had gone to one of the little, gas station markets there in Sutherland Springs. And I overheard a woman telling a story to the cashier who... her sister had been in the church. And so I said, would you want to talk with me? And she said, sure. And so we stepped outside to talk. And a reporter from Japan came up and interrupted us in the middle of the interview and was like, and I said, no, excuse me, I'm talking with this person. You have to step aside and wait. So there is that. It's just in those situations, it's just chaos. And people are making it much more difficult for you to do your job. But that's just the way that it is. At one point, it was just really hot that day. And in the afternoon, I had gone into the post office, which was a public building that had air conditioning. And I was just there to kind of cool off, drink some water, check email, you know, just sort of see where I was for the afternoon. And a lady walked in to, you know, check her mailbox. And she looked at me and she said, I do not want to talk to you. Well, I didn't even try to talk to her. I was just cooling off. But that's how assaulted people felt in this town.
The second story Debbie filed was more emotionally fraught than the first. She talked to people who lost family in the shooting. In the church, Joanne Ward was shot and killed. And so were her two daughters. Her stepson was critically injured. Debbie spoke with Joanne Ward's parents. Bob Lookingbill, Joanne's father, was receiving chemotherapy at the time.
Yes, it was like, and there again, you think, what kind of a person interviews somebody while they're taking chemotherapy? But I had spoken with the father on the phone. He really wanted to share the story of his daughter and what she had done and what she meant to them. But he had no time other than these few hours he was stuck in this one place receiving his chemotherapy. And he said, why don't you just come down here and talk to me here? I was like, are you sure that would be okay? And he said, yes. And I did. And they told a really powerful story.
I'm Bob Lookingbill. I'm Joanne Ward's daddy.
Bob Lookingbill is wrapped in a blanket, receiving his chemotherapy IV drip. His wife, Dahlia Lookingbill, is by his side, holding snapshots of Joanne and her kids, barely able to speak for her grief.
Joanne was her baby.
Joanne was the youngest of the Lookingbills' 9 kids. She was 30 and married to Chris Ward. Together, they were raising their blended family of 4 children and pets.
She had 30 chickens, 2 dogs, and a cat.
She was wonderful. I'm telling you, she'd call us every morning and check on her daddy. Mm-hmm. Yes. She was a beautiful daughter.
They talked by phone every day, sometimes conference calls with siblings looped in. She helped her father figure out computer stuff and did all the research when he got his cancer diagnosis. Dahlia Lookingbell says Joanne was always the clown in the family.
I don't care how sad you were, that baby would make you laugh. And by the time she was done talking to you, you'd be happy.
She didn't know a stranger. There was no stranger. Everybody was her friend. She would go out of her way to help her humans, animals. She just had a big heart. She lived for her children, and she died for them.
When the gunman stormed First Baptist, Joanne Ward's first instinct was to protect her kids. She pushed all four of them to the floor and covered them with her body.
Rihanna, the surviving baby in the room, told us that Mama pushed her down and tried to scoop up. She scooped up three of the babies and was laying on them when the shooter kept shooting through her to get all the babies.
That was the kind of mama she was, Lookingbell says.
What's an alternative to asking someone how they feel?
I usually start by asking, for little details about things. Like, I usually start, well, how did you find out about what happened, right? So that you get them to start sort of going through what they know and how they knew it. And then the feeling will come out, right? So when did you first get the call? Well, that must have been, a shock. You know, sometimes you don't have to ask the question. You just have to kind of empathize with the person, right? So you can just sort of say things like that. And people, I think, then start to share what it's like.
Her stepson, 5-year-old Ryland, was severely wounded and remains in critical condition.
He's facing months and months and months of surgeries in hospital. He won't get out of the hospital for a while. He was under Joanne. He got shot somewhere between 3 and 5 times, I'm not sure.
Lookingbell says the doctors are encouraged by his spirit.
He's just like a little drill bit. He's just tough, He's a fighter.
Fighting for his life at age 5, the same age as his half-sister Brooke, who was killed. It was Ryland who gave her the nickname Brookie.
She was just a little firecracker, always smiling.
Her sister Emily was the singer in the family. Her idol was the pop star Selena.
Emily would go around singing Selena. She just loved her to death. That was what she wanted to grow up to be.
How do you keep your composure?
I don't know that I keep my composure. I cry. I will cry. It's okay to cry and show your emotion. I let that happen because I think if we don't as journalists and we bottle it all up and then we might have a breakdown later when you cover horrible things. And, there were moments in the interview where I wept along with the family. And certainly when I got in the car to leave, I was very upset. It was a hard interview to do. And I went ahead and, let it out. But I think when I left and I was upset, I thought about, I don't know. That was hard. And was that the right thing to do? And then you just try to do justice with the story, which I think I did.
So talk to me a bit about leaving. Here you are. You walk in with caution and care, and you get close to people. In fact, you spent time interviewing someone while they were getting chemotherapy and brought tears to your eyes, and you went to the car and cried later. And then you leave.
Right.
Talk to me about how you leave.
Well, you just leave. But you definitely leave with a little piece of those people in your heart, right? And you think about them a lot.
Debbie Elliott is a reporter for NPR. One side note, a reporter who covers traumatic events can fall prey to the trauma as well. So check yourself. Give yourself, as Debbie did, time to be emotional if you have to. One of the best resources for reporting on distressful situations is the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma. If you expect to do any reporting on trauma, do yourself a favor, visit dartcenter.org. At the post for this house sound, I've linked to several resources at Transom as well. Transom.org. John Barth, my good sir, thanks for editing my scripts. And thanks also to the good people at WCAI in Woods Hole for allowing me to record in their studios. This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. It's produced by PRX and Transom. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thanks for listening.
From PRX. And Transom.org.